COVID-19 has upended normal life, putting an end to most of our everyday activities. From battles on the front lines to social distancing from friends and family, COVID-19 has caused a massive shakeup of our daily lives. After second-guessing everything from hugging our loved ones to delaying travel, there is one big question that everyone is likely thinking about. When will life get back to normal? It's a massive scientific and societal challenge. But if we want to throw away our masks, hit the movie theater, go to a baseball game in person, or so many other things, the path to those activities lies in developing a vaccine. On this episode of Science with a Twist, we chat with Mary Kay Bates, who's a senior cell culture scientist within our laboratory products business. Welcome, Mary Kay, and thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Ron, and everyone today with Science with a Twist.
Could you start out by telling us a little bit about yourself and your experience in vaccine development?
So my background, I've been with Thermo Fisher Scientific for about 9 years. Primarily, my job is a technical scientist, application scientist for cell culture and cell culture-based applications, including things like vaccines, cell therapy, and I work directly with our scientist customers as well, who often have the best ideas for new products. So it's a big circle. Before coming to Thermo Fisher, I worked in cancer virology for about 6 or 7 years. And then after that, I went to a small biotechnology company focusing on gene therapy, especially gene delivery. While we were mostly focused on non-viral delivery, we certainly learned a lot from viruses because they're the experts at delivery of genetic material.
Speaking of experts, I'm always amazed at the depth of knowledge that exists within the employee base within Thermo Fisher. So tremendous opportunity to speak with you today, just so that I can understand a little bit better how we will ultimately develop a vaccine for COVID-19, and more specifically, the different types of vaccines that are in development. Can you talk a little bit about the various methods that companies are using and how they are different?
Sure. So there are three main approaches being pursued. The first is using messenger RNA or mRNA. The second is using plasmid DNA. And the third is using a traditional vaccine approach using a whole virus that's been killed or weakened. So if we look at each of those individually, the first would be mRNA. mRNA is very fragile, so it needs to be coated in a lipid nanoparticle to protect it. What we're going to do is not use the genetic material for the whole virus, but instead encoding only that spike protein. If you think of an image that you've seen everywhere of this coronavirus, it's the outside coat has all of these spiky proteins sticking out. It turns out that that spike protein is really immunogenic. Inject that encased in a lipid nanoparticle, the body will take it up, produce the spike protein just like it would produce a whole virus, and then your immune system will react to that. You'll get an immune response and that will protect you. If we look at plasmid DNA, double-stranded DNA, it's much more stable than mRNA. So we can use that and inject it naked without chemically encapsulating it. So this makes the process a little bit easier. There's some pros and cons to each of these approaches. Finally, we have a more traditional approach using a weakened virus, which itself becomes the vaccine. And this is, you know, if you think about earlier vaccines like measles or polio, those all use either killed or weakened virus. This approach will use a few 21st century modifications to make it more effective, but that's the general idea.
So from a layperson's perspective, which I generally am, when we go to the doctor and we get a flu test, that flu vaccine is a weakened form of the actual flu virus?
That's correct.
And so with messenger RNA, how is that different than the traditional vaccine approach? And has mRNA been used in humans before?
Neither mRNA nor plasmid DNA have ever been used as a vaccine in humans before. Some of that development work was done in response to the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, which is an earlier related coronavirus. That was an epidemic primarily limited to the Middle East. And so there was fear that that was going to spread more widely, and there was some early development of an mRNA vaccine to treat that coronavirus.
And of the vaccines that are currently in development in response to COVID, is there one particular technique that is being used more often?
All three of those approaches are pretty much evenly represented from different institutes, which are in late stage clinical trials. As of a few weeks ago, there were 17 different institutes in late stage clinical trials. And by late stage, I mean phase two or phase three. I think there are currently at least three that have entered phase three clinical trials, and that's usually the last one before production.
I've always been interested in the terminology that is used to describe the approval process. So, you know, phase one, phase two, phase three. Can you just walk us through what each of those phases entail?
Sure. So phase one is generally a small scale trial using maybe a few dozen patients or volunteers. And that's primarily looking at safety. And then if that initial safety looks good, you don't see nasty side effects, then you would go into phase two, which would be closer to maybe 1,000 volunteers. And you might be looking at some dose responses as well as safety. So efficacy and safety. And then if that all goes well, then you go into phase three, which could be as many as 10,000 volunteers. And now you're really fine tuning the dosage and really looking at widespread efficacy.
And just out of curiosity, what is it about mRNA that has allowed it to emerge as the vaccine that is being talked about as being available the soonest?
I think that's probably because the technology allows that to be developed or produced at a much faster clip than using a whole virus, for example. So the traditional approach, like if we think about influenza, that's traditionally produced from chicken eggs. And there are things about that system where it can go wrong. The newer methods are produced in cell culture if you're producing a whole virus. And it's a much more stable, much more reliable and repeatable system. For mRNA, it's chemically synthesized. So it's not using a biological system. And that can make it a lot more speedy to produce in large scale. It's easier to spread out to different production facilities.
It seems as though we hear about vaccine development and vaccine research on the news, you know, pretty much every night. And there's a lot of speculation as to when we might see the first vaccine that can be used in humans. What is it that takes so much time in order to get a vaccine developed and then approved? What goes into the length of time that it takes to first develop and then approve a vaccine?
You're right. There has been a lot of speculation, hasn't there? I think part of that is because this is unknown territory. And if you think way back to the first polio epidemic in New York City in 1916, it took 39 years until Dr. Salk's vaccine was effective and produced in 1955. So things have sped up quite a lot, actually, but this is still unprecedented speed. Normally, the predictions are at least 10 years to develop and produce a large-scale vaccine. So that's part of the challenge. Another thing that's happening right now is we're really asking science to proceed in a way that science doesn't work well. The whole point of science is you get an idea, you test that idea, and then based on those results, you either try and test it again to confirm your results, or you'll see something that needs to be modified to improve the outcome. And then that gets peer reviewed, right? So other scientists are going to review it and say, okay, I believe what you just did. And they might also say, it would probably have a better outcome if you also did this. And then you have a complete story, you publish that story, and then a broader array of scientists are going to try and repeat your work and so on. So the speed at which we're trying to produce this vaccine or these vaccines is really unprecedented. Part of what's driving that speed is unprecedented collaboration across institutes, companies, universities, governments. you've probably seen in the news, for example, different large companies are producing vaccines for other companies that have developed it. So that's really an unprecedented level of cooperation. And then finally, the last thing that's happening is these companies that are producing these vaccines are taking a big risk in that they're already producing large amounts of doses without having that absolute proof of the efficacy.
If I understand correctly, the vaccine provides some level of immunity. Do we know yet whether or not immunity from the virus can be achieved using a vaccine?
That's a really good question, Ron. And that's something that we're trying to understand better. So you've heard probably stories about looking at T cell responses and antibody responses. These are two different arms of the immune system. And so an antibody will sort of prevent the virus from entering a cell, whereas the T cell arm would attack and destroy a cell that's hosting the virus so that it can't make any more virus. The question is, how long is a memory of that virus that you've already seen going to be durable? How long is that going to last? And does the virus mutate? So it's hard to say exactly what we're going to see there. Some studies have shown that patients who have developed COVID-19 have an immune response for months, maybe 3 months, and then it starts to taper off. The simple truth is that this virus is so new that we don't know enough about it and about how people have already been exposed, how long is their immunity going to last. I think what's most likely going to happen is that you will get an immunization, and then a few months later, you'll get a booster shot, just like you would for a lot of different vaccines that are available today.
So as we think about, you know, getting back to life or getting back to school or getting back to work or getting back to some level of life as we knew it before COVID-19, it seems as though the vaccine plays a pivotal role in achieving that. Is it likely that we would see a vaccine before, say, the end of 2020, or would it be more likely sometime in 2021?
I would say that at the speed we're developing the vaccine technology, and it's going through clinical trials with several different institutes and producers, I would say that it's likely there will be doses available for essential healthcare workers later this year, I hope. Then it's a matter of how fast can we produce that globally. And that's one of the reasons why I think it's important that there are different vaccine approaches, partly because different people may react with different efficacy to a different type of vaccine, but also because we need a vaccine for the entire planet, almost 8 billion people. That's going to be the lag there then, is how fast can we produce vaccines from different institutes? I guess an answer to your question, probably Q2 of 2021, we should start seeing vaccines more broadly available. That's a prediction and a hope.
I'm fascinated by the topic, obviously, on a number of different levels, but the one I think that I'm most concerned about is the ability for, you know, children to be able to return to school, you know, our elderly population to be safe, you know, if they're living in assisted care facilities. If you could just, you know, sort of give us your final word on the topic, you know, maybe the way that you would close, say, a conversation with a friend or a family member, you know, based on what you know, what is it that you would like us to know about the rate and the speed with which we are developing a vaccine?
I would say I'm really, really hopeful for a vaccine, partly because the best minds on the planet are working on this and collaborating at an unprecedented level. As individuals, I think the most important thing for everyone to do is wear a mask. And I know this was not emphasized early on, and I think that's because at the time it was thought that everybody needed an N95 mask. That is now shown to be not true, because the virus doesn't travel just as an individual virus particle. It travels as droplets or with dust and dirt and so on. So those cloth masks that everyone has, those actually do protect your loved ones and your friends, but they also provide some protection to you. That's the best way to knock down the spread and help us all to get back to normal life more quickly while we're waiting for a vaccine.
Mary Kay, in closing, is there anything that you would like to add that may help us as we wait for the development of a vaccine?
Well, I think that waiting is what we all have to do. And remember that everybody on the planet is going through this. And so as we struggle emotionally and mentally with the uncertainty, what can we do to take back some control? So if we think about how the virus is transmitted, it's a respiratory virus. So you would get it much like you would receive the common cold. That means if you're outside, really not a problem for transmission. Where you need to be concerned is when you're indoors, and the more people you are indoors with, the more dangerous it is, because you're just increasing the number of ways you could get that virus. So what can you do? There are three things. Most importantly, wear that mask at a minimum. If you do get exposed to the virus, it will really reduce the amount of virus that you take in, and so it's a dose response. So it's like an army. Like, one soldier's probably not going to pose a big risk to you. You could run away or dodge. But if there's a whole army coming at you, the chances of you being in danger are much higher. It works the same way with a virus. Number two, wash your hands, wash your hands, wash your hands. And you don't need to have hand sanitizer. Soap is actually even more effective, soap and water. Number three, try to maintain that 6 feet distance from everyone at all times. I know it's a little bit weird, but it's going to have to become habit until we have a vaccine.
Mary Kay, thank you so much for joining us. A COVID-19 vaccine is obviously an important topic, and with so many companies racing to develop one, it's important to help folks better understand what that looks like.
Ron, it's been a real pleasure to be part of Science with a Twist. I'm a big fan. I look forward to more episodes.
Thank you. That's going to do it for this episode of Science with a Twist. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to our podcast for other great stories like this one, and don't forget to leave us a review. As always, we want to thank all of our listeners for being a part of Science with a Twist, and we hope that you're all staying safe and healthy.